This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Basically, in the last 15 years, gone from having nothing to, if we do pick up both houses, and it looks like we will, we'll have everything. Every statewide, both senators, electoral votes, the last three presidentials, the last elements we needed were majorities in the two legislative houses, and tonight we're going to get them.
Big election night across the country. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney broadcasting from Tyler, Texas. So you just heard Tim Kaine there talking about Virginia. For the first time in 26 years, Democrats are now dominating Virginia statewide. Wise rather, in the House and in the Senate there. In the meantime, in Kentucky, in that governor's race, a real shocker, an upset. The Democrat is in, and with almost all the votes counted, right before I cracked open this mic, the Kentucky Attorney General, Andy Beshear, pulled off that stunning upset by knocking off Republican Governor Matt Bevin. This is a blow to the president, certainly ego-wise, I'm sure, but because when you're a president and when you push hard for people in the party, when you go to the state and you campaign, you're expecting to get the victory, and that didn't happen. What's up, Kentucky? He couldn't save somebody who wasn't actually that popular after campaigning with him in Lexington the night before the election. The president told supporters that a loss by the Republican governor would be portrayed. He said this as the president having suffered the greatest defeat in the history of the world. That's what he portrayed it as. So it didn't happen. I mean, the vote was tight, but Beshear wins in the end. A win is a win. And Bevin didn't concede, but because he said there was irregularities in a speech to supporters. But under Kentucky law, candidates can request a recount but have to foot the bill for it. So will that be something that happens? Stay tuned for more on that. Turnout higher than expected, which bravo on the turnout thing, but 1.4 million. That's 400,000 more. 400,000 more than the last governor's contest in Kentucky in 2015. So I ask the question again. I know you're listening in the great state of Kentucky. What's up, Kentucky? People, even lots of Republicans, weren't crazy about Bevin, and the president couldn't do much to bounce him up. It wasn't happening. And then quickly, I mentioned about the Democrats and dominating Virginia for the first time in 26 years. I don't know that this was a surprise, but again, it gives the Democrats control of the legislature and governorship for the first time in decades. And the Democrats there, remember, have pledged to pass new gun restrictions and raise the minimum wage once they're fully in power, because they have it across the board. And it's interesting, in looking at these races, of four states having legislative elections this year, Virginia's the only one where control of the state house was up for grabs. So that made it a hotly contested and watched election, certainly an election year for the people in Virginia, and so much at stake there. All right, we bounce from the elections, and I know there was all kinds of prop votes, etc., that affect you. I say this show is about what happens in your backyard and mine, and a lot of it affecting your wallet, and we're going to talk about that in the upcoming days. Some of those are still being counted. For example, there were a couple of states where state income tax was in the balance, whether or not that was going to go away or stay. One of them was Texas, and it looks like Texas will continue to have no state income tax, but it was kind of close. So there were some people that were voting, and early anyway, some people that were voting to have a state income tax, because then there's always the argument when you crunch the numbers about sales tax, etc., and all of that in between. And that's not the only thing that was up for grabs, like I said, proposition-wise, not just in Texas, but in several other places as well. While we talk about whistleblowers and impeachment and everything else, and that for the last 7 weeks has dominated so much of the convo, let's face it, the an interesting thing happened. You know, in talking about Kentucky, Rand Paul has come out and pretty much said, listen, there is no law that is preventing me from outing the whistleblower because I can do that. I can name the whistleblower. Remember, there's been all of this conversation about protecting the whistleblower. The whistleblower is not going to expose themselves, that kind of stuff. But he insisted he could name the whistleblower behind the impeachment inquiry anytime he wanted to, because it isn't against the law. He rejected an argument from the attorney, the whistleblower's attorney, who said in the Twittersphere on Twitter, revealing the name could endanger his client's safety. So, this gets more and more curious. And he did give hints, though, because he wants the whistleblower to act as a witness. He said, I do think that this individual is a material witness to the potential Biden corruption. He was there under Joe Biden. There's a hint. There's a breadcrumb. He was there when Joe Biden was trying to fire the prosecutor that was investigating Hunter Biden. This person was a Ukrainian expert on the desk at that time. So now the whistleblower is saying they're not going to appear. Isn't this interesting? We've been talking about protections and how do they get in and out of the building, out of the Capitol, etc. And that's where we are. You know, truth telling. Does it ice truth telling when you name a whistleblower? Is that okay? I mean, of course, the problem is anything high profile, and this could be more high profile. Once you go down that path, what about other people who come forward? And I can see and understand an argument, you know, made in that direction. All right, this is just sickening and beyond sickening, but I'm going to tell you the story anyway. If you haven't heard the story, there was a family, three adult women and six children, all members of this LeBaron family, that settled with a breakaway group with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in an area in Mexico decades ago. They were killed in an attack near the border. That incident, which was committed by who knows, unknown assailants, is of course being investigated. hello, drug cartels. This, now that this has happened, the president swiftly said, you know, he accused Mexico of not doing enough to fight the drug cartels. He called for the country to wage war in wake of the deadly attack on an innocent family of nine U.S. citizens in northern Mexico. And, you know, this is a family from Utah that was caught in between two vicious drug cartels who were shooting at each other. And so they are killed, including young children. So the cartels are that big and that powerful. You know, what do you do? And he is demanding, you know, okay, Mexico, let's do something about this. Wow. Crazy. And we have other things to talk about, obviously, coming up. Iran is fueling 1,000 centrifuges, and this is this whole nuke deal. They're going to start injecting uranium gas. This is a big deal in this facility that's built into a mountain. We're going to talk about that in a second, and we're going to have more experts on later in the week to talk about Iran, because trust me, we have not punted on that. And then the story of the deadly hot mic and that pervert scum back Jeffrey Epstein. Sorry, I gotta say it like it is, even though he's passed on. We're gonna talk about that next. Stay with us.
There's something about you, girl.
We can all agree these are troubled times, right? So do you know who's on your wireless network? Whether it's a big company selling your data or a foreign hacker, if you're not protected, everybody sees your information. That's why you need Flash Routers, a custom Wi-Fi router created for privacy. Flash Routers uses a virtual private network or VPN to protect your online activity from hackers, trackers, and large corporations. And not just one, but all your devices with one out-of-the-box setup. Plus, Flash Routers also enhances your wireless network performance and unlocks powerful router management and tools to let you take total control of your network. Call or click Flash Routers today at 1-866-509-5817 or flashrouters.com. That's 1-866-509-5817 or flashrouters.com. Protect your wireless home network today with Flash Routers.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney. As we continue the convo here on the show, I gave you some of the election results, the big shockers, the big headlines, if you will, at the top. Now I want to tell you that story that's just crazy about Jeffrey Epstein. Remember, I was talking about Epstein a lot and the insanity of what happened to him in prison and, oh, was he murdered? Did he kill himself? What happened? And we know the salacious stories that are unbelievable, the messing around with allegedly with younger girls, all the partying that went place and with some famous people, by the way, that were around. Now this Amy Robach had from ABC, who covers a lot of stories. You see her a lot on Good Morning, Good Morning America, and all over ABC. And I actually think she's a good reporter/anchor. She was caught on a hot mic. The Project Veritas got a hold of it, and it was released out there. And she said, "We just wouldn't put it on the air. I was told, who is Epstein? No one knows who this is." So she said, for 3 years, she had just unbelievable details, photographs, etc., from Virginia Roberts, who was underage, part of this whole Epstein circus, and she was with, allegedly, Prince Andrew. And she's saying, we had it. And we had stuff on Clinton. We had stuff on so many other powerful men, all this information, and they wouldn't let us release it. So this was a hot mic. She was talking about the story, and it was caught, and it was released. So now ABC is saying, oh, it wasn't ready. It makes them look so bad that they weren't willing to put it out there. Even that's what you know, Amy Robach was complaining about, that she had this great story and was sitting on it and didn't understand. And so it just goes to show you once again, I mean, there you go. There's a peek behind the curtain when people talk about fake news. And here's somebody who has an interesting story about a guy who was super powerful, though. And certainly, and as she says in this leaked video where she was caught on the hot mic, she wasn't intended for it to go out. This was before she was doing anything, but was sitting there killing time. She talked about them not, in her estimation, ABC, not wanting to tell the story of this pedophile, creepy Jeffrey Epstein because of the tie to Prince Andrew, and that the royals would be so upset they would not have access, ABC, to, you know, Kate Middleton or anybody else, any other stories that they wanted to do. So not a good look for ABC, let's put it that way. So there's kind of two elements to that, for sure. All right, I want to talk about this. I mean, it is a crazy day. I wanted to, my phone was just blowing up with stuff on Iran, and we're going to have some great experts on later in the week, but Iran is going to start injecting uranium gas. How do you feel about that? Into about 1,000 centrifuges. This is at a nuclear facility built inside a mountain, like I mentioned, and it's the latest step away from their atomic agreement, accord, whatever, with the world powers, since the president said, no, we're not on board with this. Because remember, there was a 2015 agreement between Iran and world powers where, excuse me, Iran agreed to turn Fordo into a nuclear physics and technology center. If you're following along, where about 1,000 centrifuges are used for purposes other than enrichment. That's what they kept saying. And we were buying it, and that's what was going on. Then, all of a sudden, things have changed. So Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said that, you know, this highly symbolic breach that is going to complicate the European efforts to salvage Tehran's nuclear deal, that, you know, this is what they're doing. They're going to do this. So they had agreed to curb their nuclear program in exchange for removal of most international sanctions, and they gradually reduced their commitments to the accord since our president, withdrew from the agreement in May last year and reimposed sanctions. So keep a big eye, in fact, on what's happening with Iran. What does it mean for us? What does it mean for you? Should we be concerned about it? Should we be worried about this big move by Iran? Or is it really even a big move? And what does it mean? They're being proactive. Well, I guess there's things they say they could have done to increase enrichment levels to 20% or to stop cooperating anyway. But what does it mean? What does uranium enrichment mean? And what does that mean for nuclear weapons grade? Of course, Iran denies ever having aimed to develop a nuclear bomb. That was one of the things we were constantly debating and hanging on to. Oh, well, they're not going to do anything bomb-wise. So, yeah, we need to trust them, right? Boy, it's been a really strained couple of years with Iran. It really has been. If I made a list of who don't you turn your back on, Iran would have always been high on that list, because once the sanctions released, and once they lessened, let's put it that way, of course it made a huge difference. They then could feel their oats, and they weren't economically being strangled, and, you know, that's pretty much how I feel about it. If you're stomping on their throat, and there is a threat to them economically, and their people, the people of Iran, are restless, they don't want that. Once you start to release that, that's what happens, and that's what it feels like happened to me. But we're going to dive a lot deeper on this, because I'm fascinated by the politics in Iran and what it means to all of us, and why we should care, why I should eat up time on this valuable show, my airtime, to talk to you about Iran. And in fact, fact, that's something good. I had a bunch of emails from Brad, from Bobby, asking me about, what do you think about Iran? Should we be worried? Is this the nutball country and not North Korea that's going to do something to threaten our way of life? That's a valid question to ask, right? The valid question. What does that mean, what they're doing with uranium? How much do we trust in the situation? And the answer for me is, I don't really trust the situation. It seems to me like they say one thing, do another thing. And again, it all, of course, focuses on whatever happens with the sanctions. And I don't think that's shocking, because once the sanctions are lifted, or when it's easier and they don't have the sanctions, then the threat is a little bit different. I think Rouhani is trying to figure out how to play this president, how to figure out how to maneuver around Donald Trump. And he's not doing a very good job of it, which that's a credit to, I think, Trump for hanging on to what he's doing there in Iran. All right. I'm going to move to talk about something different, because I've been talking about the fires so much in California. I found out today, earlier in the day, and this story then was also in the Wall Street Journal, so I was like, aha, the Wall Street Journal has it, so it must be true. And seriously, I have a friend who used to work for PG&E, and he was in the television news business with me, and the story is this, that people in California are so fed up. You got the mayors of several of the big cities, many where you're listening to me, Oakland, Sacramento, and a bunch of other municipalities, that are joining with San Jose in a campaign to buy out an investor-owned company called PG&E and turn it into a customer-owned co-op. Wow, can you imagine? They actually floated that idea a month or so ago, and a lot of support is out there from other mayors and other county officials who represent about a third of the population served by PG&E, and they're asking the California Public Utilities Commission and the governor to consider the options seriously before the state approves any bankruptcy reorg plan or any of that. PG&E, if you don't know, filed for Chapter 11 protection in January. They said they had an estimated $30 billion in wildfire liabilities. So by law, the Utilities Commission has to determine that any plan approved by a federal bankruptcy court is in the public interest before it can be implemented, and they opposed the sale of any part of their system before. They rejected an offer by San Francisco to buy a portion of their electric network that's within the city limits for $2.5 billion, and they say they don't want to be converted, all this other sort of stuff. But wouldn't it be great if there was a customer takeover? I don't know. Is that the right solution? I like the idea that they're having that discussion. And listen, if I'm a customer of PG&E, and pretty much they have a stranglehold in California, I'm tired of being in the dark. If that's what it takes, then I'm all about it. If it's going to be stronger, bigger, badder, I would have to see all of the legwork on that, of course. But it would be a way to resolve some of the problems. All right, stay with us. More coming your way next here on the show.
Maybe you will find the unknown. At least within me, you'll find a home.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to C1, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, won't testify in the impeachment inquiry as requested. EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland is now saying he told a Ukrainian official that American military aid would probably be held up unless Ukraine announced a corruption probe. Senator Lindsey Graham.
I think this is a sham process. I think the substance is not worthy of an impeachment discussion. Read the phone call for yourself. I don't care what anybody else says about the phone call. The phone call I made up my own mind is fine.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Unlike just about everything else that comes to the Senate, the Majority Leader doesn't have much ball control here. If it were today, I don't think there's any question it would not lead to a removal.
This is USA Radio News.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-871-3291. 800-871-3291. Again, that's 800-871-3291.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
You, I'm so glad that I have tasted this man's amazing cakes. I mean, seriously, he is the king of crumbs cake, and crumbs is the name of the game. Seriously, I just had one last week, and notice I said had one. Like, my husband demolished it. I was lucky I got any of it, and it was a cinnamon crumbs cake. And so, honestly, J. Steven Sadler is so busy, I can't even believe he's making time for us, because this is the time for crumb cakes, when people are ordering them. Jay Stevens got a book out. We're going to talk to him about that as well. He's in our virtual green room. Jay Steven, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Kate. I'm happy to join you.
So somebody must have, you know, I'm taking a pair of hands away from baking. How many crumb cakes do you sell, or crumbs, because that is your name? How many of those cakes do you sell, like, in the next 8 weeks?
Last year we did a little over 8,000 cakes for Christmas. We did about 3,500 for Thanksgiving.
Wow. That's a lot of baking.
Well, we ship it all over the world. I mean, we've shipped to every part of the world that you can think of.
Wow. And you do this, you've got a place in Forney, Texas, right?
That's correct, sure.
Yeah, so let's go back and tell the story. So we know you have these incredible cakes, which, by the way you deliver them, first class, and you said every nook and cranny of the world. But growing that business, the family recipe, the journey, take us back to that, because you've got a book called that's coming out called The Quest for the Best, Crafting the Experience. So tell us about the family journey and how this all started for you.
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, if you look at my life, it's all been one of opportunities and what you make of them. Little things that happen that you are aware kind of help point you towards where you want to go with your life. And I had grown up in a family, a very close family, where uncles and aunts and cousins all ate together every day. And we always had heard this history of this 400-year-old family crumb cake that my grandparents and my great uncles and aunts had made, but they had lost the recipe. My parents' generation had talked about how great it was. My grandparents' generation had talked about making it. And my generation, we just heard these stories, but we never, ever had this supposedly fantastic family crumb cake. And it wasn't until my grandmother, who was the last person of that generation, passed away, and she was actually the last person to have the recipe because they would pass it back and forth. When she died, my uncle who lived with her was searching through her night table, and he broke the drawer that he was pulling out, and underneath the drawer was the recipe. And this is like one of the beginning chances in my life. And since I had just started baking and cooking, he gave that recipe to me, and he said, one deal, put it in the safe deposit box, do not put it in your nightside table. And so it was this chance encounter that we found it, because if he hadn't broken that drawer, it would have remained underneath the drawer. They would have never seen it. They would have gotten rid of the furniture, and that would have been the end of it. So that was how it started. Interestingly enough, I grew up in a family where my dad was Austrian, which is where the crumb cake comes from, and my mom was Italian. And as you know, in most families, you pretty much grow up the way your mother is, not the way your father is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we grew up with this big Italian-type family where everybody was in the kitchen cooking, uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters. I had five brothers and sisters, and they all loved to cook. And I was the only one that did not like to cook. I felt cooking and baking was like mopping floors, you know, not what I wanted to do. Until years later, I met a gentleman named Rene Vardone, and I don't know if you recognize the name, but Rene was the chef for the Kennedys in the White House.
Wow.
Jackie Kennedy, yeah, Jackie brought him in, and I met him after his stint in the White House. And Rene is the one that taught me that crafting a fine dish was more like art and not like mopping a floor. And he was the one that kind of flipped me to realize this is what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And from that point forward, I've been chasing that dream.
And in chasing that dream, and I love that story about Rene, and that's in your book. I read that you've got a picture of him, and you talk about that, and you
yep.
talk about the beginnings of what we're talking about, this 400-year-old recipe. So you grew up in New York, and you started there, and in the restaurant business, it's tough. And when you try to pursue that, and you're chasing that brass ring, what was your first venture like?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting when you first get into the business, and I'm one to put things down on where I want to go and how I want to, you know, how I think I can get there. And I thought, well, this is pretty good. I'll open up a bakery, a little cafe, and we'll make crumb cakes. That's pretty simple. You know, you put cake in the oven, someone comes in, you sell them a slice. Well, it's not close to simple. And I think it was around 1999, I opened a little cafe in the Hudson Valley area, Highland Falls. That's about 50 miles north of New York City. And we started selling among my crumb cakes, but also other pastries and whatnot. And I learned right away that it's a much more complicated business than one would imagine, especially when you get into all these different pastries that you're making. But clearly the crumb cakes were the number one thing. And we had a gentleman who was used to come up from the city, and like I said, we were about 50 miles north of the city. And he fell in love. He used to call it his Epicurean pot of gold, and he brought it back to New York, and that just opened up the floodgates. And by, I think, around 2001, we had lines of what they called cakers. These are people that would wait out. They would wait outside our door. We opened at 5 in the morning. The line would start forming around 4 o'clock. And we would do 50 to 70 sheet trays of cakes, which is several thousand cakes every day. And we would just, people would come in, give them a slice, give them a coffee, and boom, they're gone all day long. So I knew I was on to something then, because that was by far the number one thing they liked.
Yeah, they wanted the
They
wanted the crumb cakes. And then here's the thing about that. So you have this recipe. You see these long lines. You know that this is your Epicurean pot of gold. I love that saying. Then you take the family recipe. You take all your bacon stuff, and you leave the Northeast. So how did that journey come about? What? You're leaving something good. What happened?
Well, you know, if I stayed there, I'm sure I could have gotten rich on crumb cake. You know, it's such a great dynamic area. But I remember as a kid growing up, there was a commercial, and if I can set the scene for you, the camera started at the end of a long conference table, and all you saw was the table. And as this deep voice talked, it kept going up. And as it went up, you saw people on each side, and they were all sweating and nervous. And then it got to whoever was talking. And basically what it was, as a kid, I didn't even know what it was about. I loved it for the way it's set up. You heard this deep voice going, ah, ha, ha, all these people are working for me when I should be working for them. And it was the face of a dollar bill at the end of the table. And I always remembered that commercial, and I always said, I'm never going to work for that bill. I'm going to have that bill work for me. So I hated the cold up in New York. My mom used to say, even as a kid, I would be the first one in from sleigh riding. And so I decided I wanted to move to New York, so I sold my company there. I kept the family recipe, but I sold everything else, and I moved south. If you know anything about New York, New Yorkers can move to Florida. That's like New York with the sun. You know, so you can move to Florida, but anything west of the Hudson River to New Yorkers runs over the edge of the earth. There isn't anything in the middle. So you go to Florida, which is what I did. I went to Fort Lauderdale, and I got out of the business completely. And again, I was just kind of feeling my way. I'm really where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do. And I was at the time doing franchising. I was taking companies franchise. And all my West Coast company clients would bitch and moan that they said, you know, flying from Vancouver or Seattle to Fort Lauderdale is like flying to Europe. It would take a whole day. And so basically I just looked at a map and said, what's a good airport in the middle of the country? And there were two, Chicago and Dallas. And I'd lived up north. That wasn't going to happen again. So I moved to Dallas. The only thing I knew about Dallas was the show. I knew nothing about Dallas. We just up and moved. And that's how I ended up in Dallas.
Wow. And then you exploded it from there. You found Forney, and you opened a place in Forney. Crumbs is amazing. And I want to tell everyone, if you want to get a crumb cake, there is nothing like this. So J. Stephen Sadler's not even bragging on himself enough. If you go to Crumbs, CRUMBZZ.com, you can catch one of those cakes, and you better do it soon. So in talking about your book, Quest for the Best, Crafting the Experience, what do you hope people walk away from with this?
Well, you know, I've always been a believer that you have to chase your dream. You have to follow it. And one of the things about my book, it ties in two things that I love. In my bistro in Forney, I tie in my love of travel with my love of food. And what I do is I travel around the world. I find great dishes in different restaurants from all over the world, and I bring them back to small town Texas. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic to see what small town Texas is, a meat and potatoes kind of area, and to bring back foods from France, and I'm doing the Caribbean right now, and, you know, and Italy and Germany, and to see how they accept is really interesting. And it ties the two things I love to do the most together, my love of travel and my love of food. And the book is all about that. We have several books that I'm working on. The first one is all about the things I went through to create the cake, the packaging, the whole thing, because I'm really big on creating an experience, not just eating. And then my next one is about creating that bistro to fit in with my dynamic of traveling around the world and finding all these interesting dishes.
Wow, I love it. What an interesting life you've led, and you're definitely not done yet. And these cakes are amazing. The story is so cool. I love the beginnings of this and where it's taken you. Can't wait to see what happens next. So J. Stephen Sadler, Quest for the Best, Crafting the Experience. I think people can learn a lot from reading your book about life and business. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Kate, thanks for spending the time with me.
We'll be right back.
Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com, 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product. Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I have treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Wow, having just spoken to Bill Catlett, chairman, board of directors, National Foundation for Transplants, and hearing his passion and talking about people getting transplants in the U.S. and now what's happening, we are so pleased to be joined by Eric Buchanan, and he's a transplant patient. Eric, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start with, tell us about your transplant experience. What organ did you receive and what happened that led you up to needing that organ?
So I received a double lung transplant in 2014. The need for it was because of my diagnosis of cystic fibrosis. And just like every cystic fibrosis person, they will eventually need a transplant because there's no cure for CF at the time.
And so how long were you sick, and then how long was the wait for an organ?
So I was diagnosed when I was 9 years old, but didn't really have any kind of complication or hospitalization until I think I was around 22 years old. And then even then it was tolerable. I was able to graduate from the University of Florida, and I worked for Publix for a while. And then in 2010, my lung collapsed. And I was forced to go into a disability and move in with my parents up in the Charlotte area. So from 2010 to basically 2014, I was sick, but I was just barely not sick enough to get on the transplant list. But once I was on the list, you know, it still took about a year and a half. So.
And what was that like, that period of waiting? Because one of the things we were talking with Bill Catlett about, he's the chairman of the board of directors of the National Foundation for Transplants. It's at transplants.org, mm-hmm. by the way. One of the things we were talking with him about is the fact that there are organs out there. There's just not enough people who have actually said before they pass that they would donate their organs. Really tell us, what was that year and a half wait like for you? Because what you were really waiting for was, among other things, yes, a match, but also just someone being willing to give up an organ they were no longer going to use.
Yes, it's a tough process. They do pretty well. Well, at least UNC in Chapel Hill, where I was transplanted, they do pretty well to prepare you letting you know that it's going to be tough. There's going to be ups and downs. You know, it's one point in my life I couldn't take a shower without oxygen, and I was on oxygen 24/7 for about 3 years, I would say. Mm. And then it was just, you sit there on the list and you hope and you hope and you hope. But then there's another side of you that thinks, you know, man, I'm waiting for somebody to actually die. You know, somebody's child that, you know, or adult even that just died. And I'm thinking of happiness and glory because it's a new life for me. But, It is weird kind of thinking about people dying in order to give you organs. And then the fact that, you know, that some people are organ donors, but their family at the time can overturn it. It's just one of those. I just hope they go to the right person that can respect and fully understand the present they were given, the gift they were given.
Yeah, and what a gift, Eric, when you think about that and you think about what we're talking about here with organ donation. Do you ever think you would get this lucky? I mean, there is luck involved in this and matching it and making it happen. Did you, at such a young age, to be dealing with what you dealt with, did you ever anticipate this?
I never anticipated not getting an organ. I figured I was at the age of 33 at the time, so I knew I had at least another year left, but that was still, you know, a long time to be on the transplant list. I didn't have any kind of weird antibodies to reject or to match up with the organ. And, you know, I was getting calls at first, just I got three calls in 1 month and then another one later on down the road. And then finally I got my call, but they were coming in, so that was inspirational. But my mom also had a lung transplant, and she had hers at Duke, actually, at the age of, let's say, 55, yeah, so around the same time. But I was more scared for her because she had just a couple limited things that they had to match up, and, you know, it was not likely for her to get one, but it seemed like it was very likely for me to get one. So I never thought that I wouldn't get one. I was always positive about my experience, no matter what.
We're talking with Eric Buchanan. He's a double lung transplant patient. He had the double lung transplant in 2014. We just did an interview earlier with Bill Catlett. He's the chairman of the board of directors of the National Foundation for Transplants. By the way, you and your family can go to transplants.org and sign up to be organ donors. We encourage you to do that during the holiday season and tell your family and get them to do it too. You know, Eric is the living, walking, breathing embodiment of somebody making that incredible gift. Eric, when you, I don't know how this process works. You do. You went through it. But I can imagine there's this point where you know today's the day. This transplant is going to happen. And I want to hear from you. What was it like for you when you, following the surgery, what happened when you woke up?
Yeah, so I had a apartment close to Chapel Hill because, like I mentioned earlier, my parents lived in the Charlotte area. And so it was about 3 hours, maybe 2.5 hours to Charlotte from Chapel Hill. And I got an apartment because I was getting all kinds of calls I guess it was June. So July 4th weekend, I packed up and moved to the apartment so I could be closer. Excuse me. So it wasn't so devastating for me to hear a no and then have to travel, you know, 3 hours, 2.5 hours back. So, you know, we anticipated it eventually, but then we didn't get another call. I didn't get another call until November. So that was, I was like, oh, well, you know, I kind of jumped the gun. And then I guess I got a little scared at that point that it might not happen, but I never let it enter my brain, I don't think, because I was very positive about it. But when I did get the final call, I was actually back in Charlotte on Christmas Eve celebrating Christmas with my parents. So
oh my gosh.
At seven in the morning on Christmas Eve, 2014, I got a call from the lung transplant coordinator, and he says, "Eric, we have an organ that looks really good, and we need you to come up and, you know, ASAP." And I said, "Okay, wow." Before that, they didn't, you know, they said, you know, pack your bags and blah blah blah, and you know, come on up here. And I'd wait in the ER for a while, but as soon as I got there, I just had this feeling because all my family was in town, and at that point, I just kind of felt like this was different. This was it, you know. So I'm driving up to UNC and thinking about it the whole time, and thinking this is what's planned. This is going to happen. And then everybody was showing up kind of late after I got there, and they immediately got me up to the OR prep area and just signing waivers and, you know, and then at that point, you know, my mom and everybody got there, and I think they felt it too. So they took my oxygen off and had me walk into the OR, which I thought was a little unorthodox. And I had never gotten through the operating room doors. I was on the cusp of it always, but not in the OR. So I walked to the OR and they started setting things up, and I was just, yeah, I knew that was it. You know, I knew that there was no way that they were going to get me that far and say, no, it's not looking good. But they could have, but they didn't. So everything worked out great. And as far as waking up right after transplant, you know, you're still groggy from the drugs and supposed to be in a lot of pain, but they keep that well monitored and under control. So I remember waking up and they took out the trach right away. And I remember just feeling low on oxygen, just freaking out because I didn't have a nasal cannula for oxygen to come in. And that was like a childhood blanket to me. You know, it was very important that I had that all the time. But I could fully breathe. I just had to expand my lungs more because they had been, you know, kind of closed down for a while. So, but it was definitely surreal being able to walk with, you know, without oxygen. And there's actually, I have it recorded on a YouTube video, so on my first walk, and it was less than 24 hours of surgery. So it was, and then
that's incredible.
I still feel these, yes, ma'am, it was amazing. So I still feel these moments where if I climb to the top of a mountain and, you know, in Boone or somewhere and just, you know, or run, or I started playing ice hockey again. It's just in that moment is when, you know, you think, holy cow, this is happening. I haven't done this since, you know. And those are the moments that you realize the gift you have, I think. So.
Yeah. What a perfect place to end this. Eric Buchanan, thank you so much. Double lung recipient. Wow. Amazing story. Thank you. We appreciate you coming on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.